Chapter 1. Mom, are we there yet? Cody asked from the back seat. Why are you going so slow? Skylar Matthews Adams drove along the road toward the main buildings of the Second Chance Ranch, very much aware that the closer she came to arriving, the more slowly she drove. She'd spent 3 very impressionable years living on or around this ranch, and with every roll of her tires, a memory surfaced. We're almost there, she answered for the 100th time, her gaze meeting her son's briefly in the rearview mirror. And I want to be careful, too. Remember, there are going to be lots of physically challenged people on the ranch. Horses and animals, too. We can't go racing somewhere or we might hurt them. Cody didn't answer, and she wondered if he took heed of her warnings at all. Her 7-year-old son went back to playing, making sounds, his hands fisted around his dolls as they flew through the air, crashed and fought. She stopped outside the building that served as check-in, dining hall and game room. She felt sick to her stomach at the chaos and grief she'd left behind in New York, and yet she was happy to have finally arrived. We're here. Let me out. I wanna see. Cody released his seatbelt and stood between the bucket seats of the rental. He gazed up at the snow-capped mountains towering above the ranch. Awesome. Cody's enthusiasm did nothing to ease the tension pulling her shoulders tight. 15 years ago, her mother, Rissa, had uprooted Skylar from New York and moved them to their cousin's family-owned ranch to help Skylar cope with her father's death and some other heavy-duty personal issues no 14-year-old kid should go through. Now, on this sunny Wednesday afternoon, Skylar was making the same pilgrimage with Cody for similar, yet very different reasons. Pretty cool, huh? His psychiatrist hadn't agreed with Skylar removing Cody from his weekly sessions, but when her colleague had mentioned drug therapy as the next step in her son's medical plan, Skylar couldn't bring herself to do it. Cody was struggling with his father's death, yes, but drugs? Her son was almost 8, and kids his age had active imaginations. Cody's fixation on his imaginary world was acceptable for what he'd been through. There was an issue. She knew there was an issue. But before she began feeding her child chemicals, she had to try removing him from everything and focus on him one-on-one. Montana had worked for her, helped her deal with her father's traumatic death in a car accident, and the part she'd played in it, so surely it could work for a little boy who needed to find as much fun and adventure in real life as he did in his fantasy world? I told you they made the mountains big here. I bet there are lots of vampire caves up there. See that one? He pointed to the tallest peak. That one belongs to the oldest vampire ever. Skylar got out and pushed the seat forward so Cody could climb out the conventional way versus plowing over the console and scuffing it with his shoes. Then it's a good thing we won't be going up there. Even as she made the statement, she chastised herself for playing along. But after 10 days of grief counseling the teens at her high school after a student's suicide, it was the best she could manage. They'd had a delay-ridden flight and a long drive from the Helena airport, and Skylar was exhausted. She'd already spent countless sleepless nights debating staying in New York, keeping Cody in therapy, and continuing to work alongside her co-counselor to help their students deal with the loss. In the end, she had decided to stick with her original plans. The last thing she wanted was for Cody's troubles to manifest themselves like Travis Duncan's, the boy who had hung himself. Cody's mop of silky straight white blonde hair lifted in the breeze that blew over the beautiful landscape. Thanks to the cowlick at the crown, Cody's hair always had a messy, fresh-from-bed look. And she loved it, loved him more than life. But we gotta. How will I find my dad if we don't? Ignoring the guests leaving the common room, Skylar focused on Cody and stamped down the nerves churning within her. Cody, we've talked about this. About how make-believe is fun, but it's not real. Remember? Her son's indigo eyes stared at her with mutinous intensity, his chin set at a stubborn angle she recognized from looking in the mirror. With his naturally dark complexion and light hair, he looked more like a sun-kissed California surfer than a kid born and raised in the heart of New York City. When he didn't respond, she said, "Why don't we go inside and find Grandma Rissa and Mora? Figure out which cabin is ours? Won't that be fun?" He lowered his head, and his fingers tightened around his dolls, or rather, action figures, as though he wanted to sling them at her. Ignoring her suggestion, he stared at Batman as if the doll was talking. "I know," he whispered to Batman, then heaved a gusty sigh. "Okay. We'll wait." "Cody," she said, pulling his attention to her. "What's going on? Where are we right now?"
"Montana."
"That's right. I want you to remember that. Now we're going to see Grandma. Are you ready?" Cody lifted his head and focused on the mountains with such longing, her heart skipped a beat. Maybe she shouldn't have brought him here. "Listen to me. Look at my eyes." She waited for him to obey her. "Honey, I know I sort of looked like a vampire in those pictures you and Natalie found," she said, referring to the babysitter, "but I was playing dress up. I'm not a vampire, and neither was your dad." He shook his head. "Mom, I know the secret."
"Cody, there is no secret. Your dad is—"
"No, he's not. He's not really dead. 9 months, 6 days." That's how long it had been since Tom had died, on August 26th of last year. 9 months and 6 days, but Cody still couldn't accept it. "Your father is buried in Rosemount Cemetery. We've visited his grave how many times? You have to stop making up these stories." Cody stared at Batman again before he grabbed his backpack. "We don't have to go up there to find Dad." She blinked at the sudden turnaround, but welcomed the change in topic with open arms. Talking about Tom's death wasn't easy for her, either.
"We don't? Why?"
Cody shrugged.
"Cody, why?"
"Because Dad's probably asleep now, and if we go, the other vampires might be hungry. We can stay here. Dad'll find us." She was glad Cody had changed his mind, even if she was upset because he was still pretending. Other than a single trip to Montana when Cody was too young to remember, her son had never seen so much open land. He didn't know the dangers of getting lost, despite the number of talks she'd had with him. "I'm glad you're thinking about the risks, Cody."
"Yeah.
Parker said vampires have lots of power and move really fast, like they're flying. Some are good and some are bad. Dad's a good one. When you were a vampire, could you fly?" Never had she regretted her ultimate goth girl days, complete with the black fishnet boots and two short skirts topped by skull t-shirts, more than now. Those pictures she'd saved as a reminder of how far she'd come in her life fueled Cody's make-believe world. While babysitting him, Parker and Natalie, the teenagers next door, good, straight-A, genuinely nice kids, had loved helping Cody come up with a story to match Skylar's clothing, not realizing the depths to which Cody's dream world took him. "How about we go get our key so we can settle in and explore? Won't that be fun?" Skylar said.
"Yeah.
Can I turn into a vampire like you did?"
"Cody, enough already.
Parker said they have to bite you. Does it hurt?" He then proceeded to have Batman, a vampire in Cody's mind, despite how many times Skylar had explained to the contrary, do a surprise dive attack on Robin. What could she say to him to get through to him? Get him to understand? Get him to stop? One of the horses nickered from the corral. Skylar wondered how long she'd been standing there delaying going inside because she hoped his pretending and questions would end.
"Come on, Cody. Let's go."
She ushered Cody up the ramp and inside, where the smell of fresh-baked cookies and bread filled her nose.
"Skylar.
Rissa, she's here," Mora cried. Maura Roland, her mom's cousin and the chef of the Second Chance, hurried toward them behind Skylar's mother, who'd hopped up from her chair and crossed the room in a split second. Engulfed in her mother's embrace, Skylar noticed Grace Roland, the ranch owner's wife, standing tall and lithe and grinning from ear to ear beside Maura, both waiting for their hugs.
"Oh, baby, welcome home. It's so good to see you," Rissa said. "I know you were torn about coming, after what happened with that boy, but we're so glad you did."
Rissa squatted to hug Cody and remark how much he'd grown since her last trip to New York.
"It's good to be here," Skylar said, while receiving Maura's hug, which smelled like the fresh baked cookies on the counter.
"Mom, I'm thirsty. Do they have any blood?"
"Blood?" Rissa asked, her tone filled with surprise.
"Tomato juice or punch?"
Skylar shot Cody a hard stare of reminder. "He likes to pretend."
"I have cranberry juice," Maura said.
He looked at Skylar as if to confirm that it was red, and reluctantly she nodded.
"Thank you," he said, remembering his manners.
"You're welcome, sweetie. How about a snack, too?"
"You must be hungry," Rissa said, at home in the Roland kitchen from her days of working there.
"You can eat while we help your mom settle in." Barely managing to hold in a groan, because she'd hoped for a little more time with Cody to get him out of his make-believe world, Skylar tried to smile, wondering what her family would think once they discovered the real reason she and Cody were here. One thing she knew for certain, try as she might, she couldn't hide Cody's unusual behavior for long.
Marcus Whitefeather scowled when he heard Oreo's high-pitched whinny. The mare didn't like being trapped in a stall, but she had a penchant for roaming. With her so close to foaling, Seth Roland, the owner of the Second Chance, had penned the horse for her own safety. Done teaching for the day, Marcus headed toward his van and the racing wheelchair inside of it. He had enough time to get a good roll in before Grace finished his grandfather's biweekly physical therapy session. A loud thump sounded, and the wall of the barn vibrated with the force of the horse's kick, distracting Marcus from his purpose. He turned away from the van and the hydraulic ramp lowering into position, and wheeled himself into the barn to investigate. It took a good 5 seconds for his vision to adjust to the change in light, but once it did, he spotted the source of Oreo's upset. Across from the mare's stall, a child had climbed the rails of a holding pen. The boy looked to be about 5 or 6, and he had a piece of black material tied around his neck. If the boy fell off his perch and the material got caught, he could strangle himself.
"Hey, kid," Marcus called softly, careful with his tone so as not to startle the child.
"Get down from there before you fall."
The boy ignored Marcus or else didn't hear, and continued making a shooshing sound, his arms out at his sides. As high as he was on the rail and with the material stretched out by his hands, no wonder Oreo was spooked.
"Hey, you. Kid. Was he deaf?"
Marcus waved to get his attention.
"Hey."
The boy suddenly turned toward Marcus and he wobbled before regaining his balance, his dazed expression slowly clearing. The boy stared but didn't budge. At least he hadn't fallen. That wobble was enough to have Marcus's heart thumping out of sync in his chest.
"You need to get down. You aren't allowed to play in here. Understand? The barn's off limits unless you are with a ranch employee.
Vampires can do anything." The boy bared his teeth at Marcus with a hiss.
"Vampires?"
Marcus wheeled closer.
"Not here, they can't. See that horse over there?"
He indicated Oreo's stall. "She's ready to foal, but we don't want her to have her baby yet."
So you're making her nervous."
The child turned up his nose and gave Marcus a glare.
"I'm a vampire."
He raised his arms and the cape as though that alone should prove his point.
"Yeah, well, go be a vampire at your cabin or on the playground, not here.
Vampires like the dark.
Then play in your closet until the sun goes down.
You can't play here. Now get down and try not to.
The little vampire leapt from the rail to the floor before Marcus could finish.
Oreo spooked, her shriek of complaint echoing loudly off the walls as her hindquarters hit the stall.
Marcus cursed. I told you not to scare the horse.
The boy had landed in a crouched position, but he straightened with an ease and speed Marcus envied. As he'd discovered teaching art classes and helping out occasionally with riding lessons at the ranch, not many kids that age were that coordinated.
You said a bad word.
Don't scare the horse. Marcus enunciated each word through gritted teeth, because the kid's obliviousness was irritating him. If she goes into labor right now, it could kill both of them.
Is that what you want?
The boy's eyes widened, as if he finally understood the seriousness of his actions. Marcus rolled to Oreo's stall and put his hand over the rail, waiting patiently for her to recognize his scent and approach so he could rub her nose. After she did, he reached to feel what he could of her side to see if she was contracting.
That a girl.
Easy does it. He didn't mean anything by it.
Settle down, little mama.
Satisfied she was calming, Marcus slowly backed away and swung his wheelchair to face the boy.
Don't come in here again.
Not without one of the ranch employees with you.
Understand?
There are rules, and this is not a play area.
The boy's mouth quivered.
Is she gonna die?
Marcus studied his face to figure out how much of the kid's attitude was sincere, and how much was because he didn't want to get into trouble.
I think she'll be all right, but we can't let her get riled.
If she goes into labor early, then yeah, she could die.
The colt's not turned yet.
What's her name?
Oreo.
She's a special pet of the owner's children, and we'd all be upset if something happened to her.
You understand?
The kid nodded again, not meeting Marcus's gaze. Feeling bad that he'd come down so hard on the boy who obviously didn't know better, Marcus asked, "You got a pet?"
No. I want a dog, but my mom won't let me 'cause we're not home much.
That's smart. People shouldn't get pets if they can't take care of them.
The child wiped his face on the cape.
I didn't mean to scare her.
He belatedly remembered the boy was a guest with parents who wouldn't appreciate Marcus swearing at their little angel.
I'm sorry too.
For saying the curse word.
He hoped the kid understood he wasn't apologizing for ordering him about, because the boy needed to know when to listen to adults. On a ranch with animals, equipment, and dangers some wouldn't know to look out for, it was everyone's job to keep the guests safe, especially the little ones. The boy's gaze dropped to the chair, and a peculiar expression stole over his face, one fairly easy to read.
Something wrong?
Marcus watched as the kid wrinkled his nose, but remained silent.
You sure?
The boy shrugged.
You can't walk.
Actually, Marcus could walk with the help of braces on his calves and feet. He was paralyzed from the knees down, but he had some feeling in his thighs, which made standing upright possible by wearing the braces and using canes.
What about it?
Don't you get tired of sitting?
You can't do anything.
The rudeness registered first.
What kind of parent brought a child this insensitive to a dude ranch filled with people like Marcus?
The second chance catered to the disabled, and they'd built a reputation as one of the best.
Not all of the people who vacationed here had a handicapped person in the family.
Last year, one group came simply because they wanted to show their bully of a son how politically correct they could be. The parents had quickly grown impatient with the extra time needed for some guests to perform certain tasks, and they'd left before their week ended.
I can't, huh?
Look, you need to change your attitude.
Because you know what?
I can do plenty.
I'll bet I can do almost anything you can.
Can you fly?
Or climb a tree?
Jump or run really fast?
My dad can. Good for him. But you're old enough to know better than to say rude things just because people are different from you. Didn't your dad teach you any manners while he was doing all those things?
My dad's a vampire.
Marcus blinked at the switchback to vampires. He wouldn't have pegged the boy as having a mental disability, but what did he know? Here he was, about to give the boy a hard time about judging people, when he'd obviously misjudged.
Is that a fact?
Maybe the vampire thing was the result of a brain injury. Or maybe the boy was autistic. They'd had a couple of autistic kids earlier in the spring, and one of them had had quite an imagination. The teenager had hated riding and anything outdoors, but he'd gotten into Marcus's class on working with metal and designing small pieces of art.
Yeah.
He has superpowers 'cause he's a vampire. My mom says he's not, but I know he is. She used to be a vampire, but she's not anymore. I think it's because she doesn't like to drink blood.
Okay.
He wasn't going to touch that one with a 10-foot pole.
Good for her.
Come on, out you go. Let's leave Oreo alone. The boy picked up two action figures from the barn floor before he began to meander in the right direction. Marcus followed, watching as the child shoved the figures into his pockets before he grabbed the ends of his cape, stretched his arms out, and made that noise with his mouth again.
Hey, kid. Can you find your way to your cabin?
He was a little leery of sending the boy off on his own.
My mom said I could explore if I stayed close.
Yeah, and look how well that worked out. What kind of mother sent a kid like that to play on his own?
What's your cabin number?
As though he'd wised up to why Marcus was asking, the boy's mouth formed a sullen line. They moved through the open doors of the barn, and a female voice could be heard calling a name.
That's my mom.
Sounds to me like she expected you to stay closer. The woman's voice came from the group of structures to the right, beyond the stand of pines. A well-worn path cut through the trees, the lower limbs removed to allow easier access for guests. Enough remained to obscure his first peek of the woman, but he was able to make out slim legs in form-fitting shorts and flip-flops. Those legs had one heck of a sexy sway.
Well, Cody, he said, using the kid's name now that he knew it, it was nice meeting you.
Take my advice, okay? Stick close to your mom until you get the hang of things. That means no unsupervised trips to the barn or anywhere else. You don't want to wind up in trouble.
Cody?
The woman's voice grew closer.
Okay. But I won't get in trouble.
And why's that?
Because my grandma says we belong here, and my mom used to live here.
The shock of the kid's words left Marcus rolling to a slow stop. My mom used to live here?
Grandma.
The boy's words could mean anything, but suddenly the kid's appearance smacked Marcus in the face. The white blonde hair, his big blue eyes. That stubborn chin, and a dimple the size of a small crater in his cheek. He glanced toward the woman heading for them, able to see a little more of her seductive stride.
Who's your mama?
He hated the urgent huskiness in his voice.
What's her name? He asked, praying he was wrong.
Her name's Skylar.
There she is.
See? The woman broke through the tree cover and stopped so abruptly little rocks scattered at her feet.
Yeah, seemed he wasn't the only one surprised.
A rush of anger, fast and powerful, came at him like a 300-pound linebacker. In its wake was a wave of pain and regret, so massive he couldn't breathe.
Marcus, she said, visibly dazed. What are you doing here?